Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, your host, a father of five sons, Daniel, in the studio with me today. We're broadcasting from my basement during the demise of Western civilization, the breakdown of economies in the West. Very interesting things happening in the world markets these days, and we are monitoring the decline of the Christian worldview and the concomitant breakdown of economies. Well, folks, back to the economy today. Here in America, we're seeing that there is no economic recovery. So far, the housing market is still in shambles. We're breaking records for foreclosures. The number of homeowners who've missed at least one payment on their mortgage surged to a record in the first quarter of the year. More than 10% of homeowners missed at least one mortgage payment in the January-March period, up from 9.1% a year earlier. You thought 2009 was bad? You should check out 2010. More than 4.6% of homeowners were foreclosure, also a record, but that number, which is now adjusted for seasonal factors, was up only slightly from the end of last year. And as you know, things are falling apart in Europe. Greece is in shambles. Riots in the streets. People decided that rioting may be the best way to fix their economic woes, and three people are now dead. This is how characterless people fix their economic problems. They riot in the streets. This is what happens, of course, when you break down the character of a people. Greece is running a deficit of 14% of GDP, with a debt approaching 100%, with Portugal, Spain, Ireland, Great Britain not that far behind. And as far as America is concerned, not that far behind either. We're at 10% of GDP 2009 for our debt. Probably 11% in 2010. That's pretty significant, folks, approaching the 14% that Greece now touts. We have trillion-dollar deficits projected through the decade, bringing the public debt held by citizens, companies, foreign governments, and sovereign wealth funds close to 100% of GDP, which means America is not that far behind Greece. Listen to what Pat Buchanan says about this. All of Europe adopted universal health care. All voted in shorter work weeks. A higher minimum wage, greater job security, earlier retirements, and munificent pensions as the cradle-to-grave welfare states rose, an ever-increasing share of the labor force left the private sector for the security of the public sector. To make matters worse, Pat talks about the pill showing up in the 1960s, then abortion on demand in the 1970s. Of course, you know the results, birth implosions everywhere, Greece being one of the lowest. 1.3%. Greece's birth rate has been below zero population growth for three decades. Count them, 30 years. 30 years, Greece has been below replacement levels. The median age in 2000 was 38. The median age by 2050 will be 50. Were Greece a company, the solution would be bankruptcy, but Greece is a country, and a bailout of $141 billion is being put together by the European Union and International Monetary Fund. Why? Because should Greece decide not to take a chainsaw to her welfare state but walk away from her debts and default, she would blow a hole in the balance sheets of the biggest banks in Europe. Folks, the people in these socialist countries have no character. Why? Socialism. Over 50 years, socialism has drained them of their character. And people without faith and character are not going to reconstruct their economies. Now, people with faith and character have nothing to fear in economic downturns. I mean, who wants to hire somebody who has no character in an economic downturn? Who wants to hire somebody who has no character in an economic collapse? I mean, who in the right mind would do that? Especially when the socialist welfare state is no longer going to salvage you. Faith and character is the only thing that will hold us in good stead during difficult times, my friends. And my encouragement is it's time right now to invest in character. Invest in discipleship. Invest in mentorship. We're doing mentorship. That's what we're about with this radio program and with our mentorship program we do in my basement here 3 days a week through the Shepherd Center. We're about mentorship. We're about discipleship. We're teaching tens of thousands of people to abandon education and cramming facts in the brains of automatons. We've been doing that through institutionalized education for the last 100 years. We abandon that. We're right now running across the country trying to salvage a few hundred thousand families in this country, teaching them that it's about character. Character is preeminent in the education of a child. Talk discipleship. Talk mentorship. Don't talk education. We're getting rid of the institutionalized form of education. We're also encouraging people to get back to God's curriculum to care their kids. And that, of course, is God's book on education, the original book on character, the book of Proverbs. And that's why I put together a study guide on the book of Proverbs available at my website, kevinswanson.com. You say, what in the world does character have to do with economics? everything. We'll be back in just a moment to talk with Brad Hamill, an old friend of this program who follows what's happening to world economies. Be back in just a moment with Brad. Stay with me.
That is a classic. That's not a classic. Classic? Not a classic. Classic? Not a classic. Classic? Not a classic. Get the classics. Christian classics from Generations with Vision. Available at generationswithvision.com.
And we're back on the Generations Radio broadcast. Now with me is Brad Hamill from the New Family Economics newsletter. And Brad, welcome back to the program, my friend.
Thanks, Kevin.
You know, Brad, a lot of changes have occurred just since our last interview. You've been on the program a number of times, but we have slowly worked our way through this, what they call the Great Recession of 2009-2010, the greatest recession, they say, since World War II. It's a significant economic downturn, and it looks to me like recovery is still not in sight.
No, we aren't going to be seeing recovery, I estimate, probably another 8 to 10 years.
Mm. Yeah.
What we're seeing right now is a second downturn, actually. The Great Depression actually had two major downturns as well back in the 30s.
Yeah.
And the second downturn, just like back in the 30s, is a much more dangerous downturn than what we saw in late 2008, early 2009, because this one's actually where we're going to begin seeing various governments around the developed world either come crashing down or be severely economically hurt.
Yeah. Now, the first phase of the downturn was a shutting off of the credit valve, and you've repeated that a number of times on your newsletter, by the way, available at brad@newfamilyeconomics.com. You just need to email Brad to get signed up to his economic updates. But the first part of this whole downturn occurred when somebody just went up to that credit valve and just twisted it counterclockwise.
Right. It's my contention or my hypothesis that the international banking system is what's driving this whole downturn and has since 2008 by shutting off the availability of credit, causing the money supply of the developed countries to plummet, causing a lot of people to default on their loans. And then, of course, the banking system takes the underlying assets as those loans default. And, and that will go on for a period of time, and then pretty soon probably about another, like, say, 8 to 10 years, the banking system will start allowing credit back into the system again, increasing the money supply, allowing moderate inflation, and then the asset prices will begin going up again. But many of the assets will now be owned by the bank.
But governments tried to compensate by massive spending. They continue to borrow despite the fact that credit has been shut off. Why is that?
Well, they have no choice. With credit being shut off, government is seeking to maintain their power structure. And the only way they can do that is to try to keep the money supply at a high enough level to where they can maintain their strength. And with the credit valve being shut off, where the money supply is shrinking, the only choice that the governments of the world have is to create new debt through increased spending on virtually anything they can think of in order to artificially increase the money supply and maintain their power.
Why do banks lend to these governments if they're shutting off the credit supply for everybody else, Brad?
Well, the banks really aren't lending to the government right
okay.
now. The government sells treasury securities, and a lot of various entities will buy those treasury securities. And that's one way that the government will bring income in, and then of course other ways are through taxes and so forth.
Yeah.
So.
But at some point, will governments have a hard time selling those securities?
Some governments will, yes. One example, of course, would be the country of Greece is having a terrific problem of trying to sell their treasury securities. The United States. A lot of people say that they'll run into a problem. I highly disagree with that, since the U.S. dollar is actually what the rest of the world uses to trade in internationally, and so we see a lot of of investors all over the world flocking to the U.S. dollar right now, which is why we see it strengthening, which a lot of people have said in the past where the U.S. dollar would be weakening, and they were very wrong in that assumption.
Yeah, yeah. So for the time being, the U.S. government's going to be okay?
For the time being, I wouldn't say okay. They're in the same problem as in the same boat with everybody else. But they aren't in as big of a problem as what we're seeing going on in Europe right now, where Europe's about to slide into a major deflationary depression. And of course, Japan is already there.
I saw a story just recently, Brad, that I think it was in the Wall Street Journal this morning, headlines, we have the lowest inflation rate in 40 years. What's your take on that? I mean, you've been the deflation guy for a long time, and it appears we're moving deflationary, even now.
Right, and that headline was put in they were championing that headline, making it sound like it was great news.
Yeah, yeah.
So my take on it is it's more of the media and government propaganda you see out there where people are being led to believe that our economy is actually on the path of improvement when it's the actual opposite of that. With the inflation rate being non-existent, that is going into the deflationary spiral that I write about. And, of course, deflationary spirals come about by a decrease in the money supply.
Yeah.
So each unit of currency in the money supply then becomes more valuable.
Yeah. Now we're also seeing that workers are seeing salary reductions and reduced benefits. Why is that? I mean, they're not only losing jobs, but I'm guessing 20, 30, 40% of the people I run into are complaining of the fact that they haven't had a raise in 3, 4, 5 years, while inflation has had somewhat of an impact upon their expenses.
Right. It's with the deflation that's occurring throughout the country, even though people don't use that term. Companies aren't stupid. They need to cut back, and they can't go out and get what's called commercial paper or short-term loans anymore to cover their payroll. They have to actually find other ways to bring in the dollars to meet payroll. And one of the ways they do it is by cutting their fixed costs. So they'll cut down on infrastructure. They'll cut. They'll lay off employees, they'll reduce benefits, they'll freeze salaries in a lot of different ways. And they have no choice but to do that. So the problem with all of this is that people that have existing debt, either mortgage loans, auto loans, et cetera, that debt now becomes more expensive to pay off because they're making less money through all these freezes. So it's going to take them more hours of work to pay those monthly debt payments.
Yeah. And so, of course, the moral of the story is something we repeat again and again on this program, and that is get out of debt and get out of debt now, if at all possible. Of course, a lot of people have a hard time with that because they've been collecting debt for a long time. We're in 20 times more debt adjusted for inflation per household than we were 100 years ago. It's going to be a hard time, a real hard time for folks to get out from under all of that. But in the meantime, what should the governments do? Let's say you were in charge, Brad, of Greece or even the United States. Okay, you were the guy calling all the shots. What would you do? I mean, if you cut socialist programs and bit the bullet, you'd probably get rioting in the streets, which is exactly what you got in Greece. If you don't, and you just keep kicking the can further down the road, then you're probably going to wind up with riots in the streets in the years to come. So, I mean, what are your choices here?
Well, the only choice the government has, which is what they're afraid to take, would be for the various government treasuries, such as our U.S. Treasury, to start issuing our currency instead of allowing central banking systems to issue the currency of a country. This would make it so the currency being issued is not based on debt. In other words, the United States would not need to sell treasury securities in order to create money. Their treasury would create the money. And a lot of people argue a lot about whether that's a good idea, and they think that the government can't be trusted to do that. But if we're going to have a national currency, that's really the only option to have a healthy country. To issue all currency based on debt is just giving a lot of power to the international banking system. Now, the problem is if governments try to do that, there's a very real possibility, and it would probably happen, is that the banking system would just say, fine, if you're going to try to play that game, then we'll just stop doing what we do, and we'll just kind of shut down the finance system of the developed world, which would bring everything to an immediate crash. So it's really a pretty difficult situation where governments don't really have a lot of options right now, and people like to blame the governments, and they do need to get a lot of the blame, but we really have, from a consumer standpoint, we really have two enemies. One would be the government, and the other would be the banking system. And so the consumer that has debt is going to get squeezed from both sides. They're going to find their loans are harder to pay off, require more hours of work to pay off their loans, and the government's going to start requiring more taxes of them. So they're going to get squeezed from both sides, which leaves very little money in the middle in order to pay for their normal daily activities.
And the moral of the story is ultimately, as you move towards a debt-based society and a socialistic society where government's controlling so much of our lives and producing womb-to-tomb security, in the end, you're just going to see bankruptcy. And I think, Brad, it ultimately leads to the fact that we become materialistic pigs. We have no real character as a nation. And when you our government trying to deal with a nation whose character has been undermined for the previous generation or two, you're just creating a seedbed for anarchy, and it's just, I guess at that point, you're just hoping that tyranny will be able to control the masses. Just massive taxation and regulation will somehow keep everybody under control.
Right. We need to go back to a biblical model. If you look at all of the, whether you talk Jerusalem, whether you talk Greece, whether you talk the Romans, biblically, all of their currency was manufactured and produced by the various governments. There was no such thing as creating debt in order to have currency. And so all of the currency was based on, if you did labor and you completed your labor, you got a certain amount of currency for that. Now we have a system where all of our currency, none of it is based on what I call completed labor. All of it is based on a promise of someone else's future labor in order to pay off that $10 bill that we have in our pocket. That's a very dangerous way to run a society, and it makes all of us perpetual debt slaves.
Yeah. Well, the solutions, of course, being to get back to a biblical society. And I think on the micro level, all we can do at this point, Brad, is to encourage people to get out of debt and to train their children in biblical economics and hopefully biblical character.
Right. It's going to be a slow process to crawl out of this, but we really need people to understand biblical economics. We need people to raise their, especially their sons, to go out and fight the battles out there, because this is a multi-generational problem.
Well, folks, if you'd like a regular update from Brad Hamill, just email brad@newfamilyeconomics.com. That's brad@newfamilyeconomics.com. Brad, thanks again for joining us on Generations. We appreciate your work.
Thank you, Kevin.
And we'll be back in just a moment. And we're back on the Generations broadcast, folks. As we talk about the economy, I want to remind you that some states are better than other states when it comes to the economy, and it has a lot to do with government policy. Chief Executive Magazine has a great survey out called The Best and Worst States for Business. I like the Heritage Foundation's study of the best countries for freedom around the world. We follow that on this program just about every year that comes out, and half for 8 years. But now we've got a great little comparison between states produced by the Chief Executive Magazine, where they study hundreds of CEOs and their opinions concerning governments and quality of life in various states around the country. And what they find is that there are some really bad states and some really good states. The absolutely worst states for business around the country: Massachusetts, no surprise there, New Jersey, Michigan, New York, and of course California. California, the worst possible state to live in which to do business or to expect any kind of economic success. The best states: Texas, North Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, Nevada, Florida, Georgia, all red states. You got it, red states. Colorado is number 8 for the best state in the country when it comes to the best place to do business. Well, folks, there are states responding well to the recession and have improved over the last year or 5 years by decreasing taxes and regulations and making it easier for businesses to engage in their states. The best states for responding well to the recession are Washington State, Arkansas, Utah, Nebraska, and Wyoming, largely red states, not the blue states. The worst states for responding to the recession, increasing taxes and regulations, making it painful, making it way worse for those who want to engage in business and economies in their states. The worst states for making things even worse during a recession: Oregon. The state of Oregon is the worst. The worst state in America when it comes to responding to recessions. North Dakota is bad. Connecticut, Alabama, and Massachusetts. Again, the bad, bad states for responding to the recession: Oregon, North Dakota, Connecticut, Alabama, and Massachusetts. California being the worst state in the union for economics. Unemployment, of course, 12.6% there right now, up from 11% a year ago. They're not doing any good. California is still doing badly, raising taxes, making it hard for businesses to survive and people to obviously be employed and enjoy some economic success in that state. Here's a couple of the comments that Chief Executive Magazine made concerning California. The leadership of California has done everything in its power to kill manufacturing jobs in the state, observed one CEO. As I stated at our annual meeting, if we could grow our crops at in Reno, we'd move our plants tomorrow. How is it that the nation's most populous state at 37 million, one that is the world's eighth largest economy and the country's richest and most diverse agricultural producer, a state that had the fastest growth rate in the 50s and 60s during the tenures of Democratic Governor Pat Brown, Republican Governors Earl Warren and Ronald Reagan, should become the Venezuela of North America? California, the Venezuela of North America. Californians pay among the highest income sales tax in the nation, former exceeding 10% in the top brackets. Unemployment statewide is over 12%, higher than the national average. State politics seem consumed with how to divide a shrinking pie rather than how to expand it. Bill Normandy, CEO of San Francisco Medical Device Maker ITC, summed it up: California has a good living environment, but it's unfavorable to business, and the state taxes are not survivable. My observations concerning this, folks, is number one, regulation and massive taxation usually follow prosperity. Yeah, California, Michigan, Massachusetts had a good heritage, a great heritage. They were very productive in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, but socialism and massive taxation, immoral liberal policies almost always follow prosperity, and they killed those states. And thank God for decentralization. Man, decentralization helps. Even though the federal tyranny is pretty intense, pretty centralized in this country, the founders of this country understood the importance of decentralization, and that's why they federalized. That's why they did the decentralization approach and gave the states a tremendous amount of self-governing power, more than a lot of other countries. And states could compete for business by not tyrannizing their peoples, while other states did tyrannize their people. And thankfully, we do have some states' rights, and we have some active state governments that are doing what they can to court businesses in their respective states. Well, secession may be on the way. If economies in these states break down, who wants to be taxed to sustain California? I don't know. Do you? Coloradans? People from Arkansas? People from Maine? People from Louisiana? Texas? You want to be taxed
to sustain a shrinking economy in California where socialism and high taxes are killing those people? I don't think so. I don't want to be sustaining California. And that's going to be, I think, the impression of a lot of people, and secession may be on its way, folks. Yeah, we're dealing with centralization and have since 1865, but I think we're going to see an ongoing decentralization come to a state near you. Ladies and gentlemen, some things to think about as we talk about economics on this edition of the Generations Broadcast. I hope these programs are helpful to you, educational, hopefully inspiring some vision in you. Let me remind you that the very basic building block of all of society is character. And if we're going to have strong economies, we've got to have strong character. And that's, of course, why we encourage discipleship. Unless we see a Copernican revolution in the area of education that is bringing discipleship, mentorship, a focus on character back, we're not going to see a salvaging of economies in any of these respective states. So my encouragement, get back to a proper biblical approach to raising your children in faith and character. That's why I produced my book, The Book of Proverbs, a study guide on the Book of Proverbs, which is God's book on the education of a young man or a young woman. I encourage you to teach your children the Book of Proverbs. You may not be able to salvage the economy in any other way, but the best investment you can give your children and the future of your family will be a training of your children in the Book of Proverbs. So you can get my study guide in the Book of Proverbs at kevinswanson.com. And also, if you'd like to continue to support this radio program, keep us on the air for the next year. We are right now in the middle of our major fundraiser, folks. And right now we stand at 37 of our 100 sponsors. If you'd like to be a partner for the Generations Radio program, if you have an extra $10 a month or $20 a month or $100 a month to keep us on the air, my encouragement is to go to the website right now, kevinswanson.com, and click on Become a Partner for Generations. You can also call toll-free 888-839-6132. That's 888-839-6132 to keep this radio program on the air. Folks, you have been listening to the Generations broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. And your host. You can email me if you have any input for the program at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.